Now, Ben, in the wonderful world of social media, Lou has just shared with us a story which goes back to Teletubbies and celebrates the delights of Veronica, his number one daughter, who's just scored the highest ever dissertation mark from the University of Roehampton, a mighty 90%. A round of applause, please.
Apparently, you've been told that 70 is exceptional, 80 demands publication as a reference document for the university, and so we don't know what...
90 is stratospheric. But meanwhile, let's go back 20 years to when you were the Teletubby Rabbit Man. Father's Day.
Yes. Veronica recently downloaded a picture of herself when she was 3 years old, with my good self being 46 at the time, with the heading... Veronica, Daddy's little international bunny girl, as we were setting off to America for her fourth visit at 3 years old. And it created quite a bit of interest, I think, with many, many likes. But it caused a lot of the Americans who'd had pictures on of themselves with their fathers currently to start downloading pictures of 20, 30 years ago. So we created a bit of a...
Well, as we welcome Ed Wellman, welcome Ed.
Hello, morning.
Traffic okay?
Don't get me started.
Okay. Any thoughts you'd like to share with Lou about this joyous experience?
Yeah, I think it's the fifth time on the trot that I've been here. The fifth annual Lincolnshire show I've been to in a row. And the traffic was worse than ever. I'm going to talk about the traffic because it really was appalling today in Lincoln. As soon as you got north of the Risehome roundabout, it's absolutely fine there, but just coming out through the town, there's just nowhere to go.
Well, you see, Ben, we didn't really have this problem, did we, starting off as we did at 6:45?
No, but I don't think many people did, leaving that early in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah, I noticed you were the third person to sign in on the sheet. There was only two stewards that signed in before you, and they slept here last night.
It's always important. Anyway, welcome, Ed. What's your thoughts on the 133rd event?
It feels very warm so far, and sunny. A little bit too warm, actually, I suspect. But there's a nice feel about it. I mean, it just feels like it knows what it is. There's no fuss here. It's just really into the swing of what it is, the Lincolnshire show, isn't it? I mean, it really has evolved over the years, this is what it is now.
Well, Lou, you remember Ed when he was the boy broadcaster, and as described by the wonderful Dylan Rice on his latest Facebook scenario, when I re-posted a four-year-old thing, as Ed, he looks so young, Alex looks as ever as though somebody's put a ferret down his trousers. What are your thoughts? Would you agree with what Ed's been saying?
I wouldn't like to be the ferret. Yes, I agree totally.
Ed, we have been joined by the fantastic individuals who are all part and parcel of the University of Lincoln's fantastic production, of course, Director of Communications and ongoing material. It's Ellie Sample. How are you, Ellie?
I'm super, Alex. How are you?
Very good. Well, we've been covering a whole range of things at Lincolnshire Show so far. Ben Lewis is currently uploading things in the press tent as we speak, so good stuff there.
That's amazing. But it's a beautiful day, it's sunny, it's happy, and there's loads going on.
Well, I know Julie Corden did fantastic work yesterday in setting up the University of Lincoln tent here. She's now in Glastonbury. So all's well with the world. What are you looking forward to yourself at the Lincolnshire Show?
I always love the sheep, to be honest. They're probably my favourite. They're so cute.
Are you Suffolk or Lincoln Longwool? A question you probably never thought you'd be asked on a show day, but it's always a critical sort of line from the sheep fancier's line.
Well, I like the man who does the sheep dancing. I don't know if you...
Stuart with Nobby the Sheep, well known for his Rastafarian routines. I'll put in a special word with Stuart, because, of course, he's also got his dog and duck special as well this year.
I know. I haven't ever seen the duck special, and I really, really want to see that. It's my favourite thing at the show, apart from, of course, the University of Lincoln stand.
Well, inevitably, and by the main ring, in case people listen to this online and want to check the thing out. We also have the fabulous...
Maria, hello!
Maria, we pass... at the University of Lincoln every so often, and then, you know, we see each other again in another decade.
Years go by, but we still always keep in touch.
Well, exactly, and that's the critical side of things. And what about yourself? How many Lincolnshire shows have you got under your belt now?
Oh, I think about 10. I haven't been to the last couple, so this is a novelty for me to be here today. So it's nice because it's so sunny, and I'm really pleased to be up here.
Absolutely. And again, Ellie, one of the sort of key things, just part of the tremendous excitement that occurs within Lincoln and Lincolnshire, and which the University of Lincoln is very much not just part of, but instrumental in kind of promoting.
Very much. I mean, we're at the heart of the community, as you know, Alex, and it's really important for a university. We're a top 10 university for student satisfaction, teaching quality, but also world-leading for research. And if you come to the show today, you'll see Thorvald, our agricultural robot, which is absolutely revolutionising the way that farming is done. And where better to do that than the hub of farming than in the UK?
And you mentioned robots, of course. A little flag up for Professor Carenza Lewis, whose Lincoln Lights project, our Lincoln Get Hold of Technology and Science, is happening in September. I've just been putting the finishing touches to the first of a whole series of 12 podcasts with academics there, which will be released in the very near future.
And Carenza, of course, from
the University of Lincoln, and a whole range of other sort of elements as well, from Time Team.
Time Team, yes. Carenza from Time Team. And such a fantastic person, does so many exciting things. And I'd urge anyone who can to go along to the lights projects that are happening all around the city.
Well, she's on next week's Midweek Drive as well, so that's all very exciting.
That is fantastic.
Ellie, of course, you'll be returning in August.
Yes, which I'm really looking forward to. We've got some great minds coming up in the later part of the year. We can't announce them all at the moment, but there will be Chris Packham doing his Bats and Owls on Halloween. And we'll also have Carol Ann Duffy, and we've got some other stars lined up for people who
very
want to
very exciting.
Come. Thank you, Alec.
Now, we're delighted now to be able to welcome a special guest to the Linkageshire Show, and the Embassy of the Russian Federation presents Vladimir Derbensky. We just check we actually got the pronunciation for that part of you. Vladimir Derbensky.
Hello.
Councillor and agriculture attaché, obviously based at the Russian Federation. Welcome to the Linkageshire Show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. It's my first visit to Lincolnshire. It's my first visit to this beautiful show and this summer day. And I enjoy it very much. I already met a very interesting people in the agriculture area, and I'm pleased to continue study, to learn more, to understand more how people communicate here, how people work here, what companies are here on the ground, will be happy come any time when I will be invited. And thank you, Michael, for inviting me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And a quick mention for yourself, Michael.
Michael Anion from Springthorpe near Gainsborough. I met Vladimir in January and thought he ought to see the major agricultural county in the country. So,
well, you're absolutely right, because clearly, although it's small, it's perfectly formed, and I think it's the breadbasket of England in many ways, really.
Well, yes, it's a very important part of England, and it's a very beautiful part of England. Yesterday I took him up into the Lincolnshire Wolds, which are marvellous, equally as good as the Cotswolds. We're very proud of them, very proud of the whole county.
So, Vladimir, I mean, clearly from my Polish background, I'm well aware of, obviously, Russia, and it's phenomenal size, amongst anything else. What are your initial feelings, having just had a little look around the Lincolnshire Show today?
I like agriculture in this country. I like fields in this country. I like people who work in this rural region. I like British food, and I'm impressed very much. Yesterday we visited several farms, and I saw the potential yield in the fields. So I spoke with the manager of a collective of farms here, and I found that a real enthusiast work here in the field, and the future of this farming system in a good hands.
So, хорошо and очень хорошо.
Yeah, good and very good.
Yes, exactly. Okay, Ben, thoughts or result?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Good afternoon now, almost 10 minutes till good afternoon. Obviously this is your first experience to the Lincolnshire Show. Is there anything in particular you've got your eye on that you were looking forward to having a look at?
Yeah, for me, what is important here, just to visit cooperatives. Yesterday we visited two cooperatives, and today we plan to visit cooperatives.
Cooperative.
Cooperative? Cooperative. What's the name of this cooperative?
Yesterday.
Today.
Open Field.
Open Field. Yes. And also we were present during the speech of Deputy President of NFU here, and the stand of NFU. So for me it's very important to understand this system, how farmers organize their work with the community, how they organize their work in cooperatives, how they communicate, how they benefit from this cooperation. We try to establish this system in Russia, and I will be happy to learn more. And in 15 minutes, we plan to visit this open field and discuss all interesting issues with them.
I think it's been a delight for us today to connect with you, good self. And let's hopefully look to connect again in the very near future, if that's okay. Who knows, we should actually set up this special relationship between the Russian Federation and agriculture there and the joys of Lincoln.
Yes, so sorry.
We'll continue this wonderful partnership, you think?
Absolutely, yes. Let it remain forever.
Positive thinking, Vladimir.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, we plan as soon as we find that the world will be more open, we will be happy to trade with British farmers on direct or indirect way, and we love British food. We know the quality of British food and British products, and we will be happy to work to cooperate with the British farmers.
Do you know, I can almost hear the parliamentarians in Westminster shouting for joy if they're listening to this podcast. Just goes to show, Ben, that we're leading the way once again.
Certainly, as ever. And it's great to be able to connect with Vladimir here today and obviously introduce him to Lincolnshire local agriculture, as well as what produces the national agriculture too.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy, and I thank you very much.
Particularly interesting that in Russia, I believe, they have no cooperatives, no farmer-owned businesses. So I've been able to show him three in Lincolnshire: Wall Marsh, World Grain Storage, and Open Field. And I think it's a way that Russian agriculture, I'm sure, will be hoping to look in the future.
It proves that perestroika and glasnost were worthwhile after all.
Yes, you're right, completely. We just... think like you just told. Thank you very much.
So after the delights of Vladimir, of course, from the Russian Farming Federation, I'll just make sure we've got his details there. That was Vladimir Derbensky, councillor for an agricultural attaché from the Russian Federation. We move on to an even more significant person. In fact, it's a double whammy of delights, because is it Lena Jane, or is it indeed Annie Start? It's one and the same. Annie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very nice to be here.
Good to see you. Officially your first location report as a midweek drivette, I believe.
It certainly is. I feel honoured.
Well, you know, Tessa is currently in conversation with folk from, I believe, Lincoln City Radio, so who knows what's happening there. All great stuff there. What are your initial thoughts as you've wandered through the showground today in search of the media centre?
It was a long search, but an extremely interesting one. And what a wonderful, wonderful family day out. I mean, there's just everything here for all ages, young and old, the weary, the tired, the energetic. And it's absolutely full of fun, very vibrant, fantastic day out.
Well, Ben has been busily doing all sorts of other bits and pieces there, including learning some Russian, which is always great. You never know what's going to come in handy,
no,
really.
No, it's a very unpredictable Lincolnshire show, by all accounts. But no, it's actually, I was very interested in it just then. Yeah, it's going well, quite good today, I think it is.
And rather like Annie here, it's also your very first Lincolnshire show, I think, because is it your first one as well, Lenny?
It is my first one, yes. Yes, so not my first show of this kind.
No, of course.
It's actually this neck of the woods. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, the good news is that Tessa has been released by our colleagues from Lincoln City Radio. I don't know what they were sort of muttering about, dissertation advice, etc. Ignore everything, Tessa. Ignore everything. Tessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here again. Second year in a row. So nice and warm this year. It was raining last year, so that's a bonus.
Yes, I think the rain's on tomorrow. But anyway, Ben, any questions for Annie?
Yeah, Annie, after obviously your experience this morning battling the traffic, is there anything in particular you're looking forward to today? Obviously, it's your first event. I mean, there's a lot to do and there's a lot for everyone from what we've been told. Is there anything that's taken your eye so far?
Well, I'm an absolute animal lover. I've got to go in search of some animals. I've got to go and pet some lovely furry little four-legged friend, or two
It could be a chicken, it could be a turkey, it could be anything, I don't know. But obviously there's a singer here. I've got to go and have a word with her because a girl after my own heart, that's what I do. And so it'd be nice to sit and have a listen and have a chat with her. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And well, anything. Maybe the food, maybe the food.
Who is the singer?
We haven't got her name yet. She's near the entrance.
Singer with no name.
Yeah, but she's singing 40s songs, so...
Oh, but nobody can actually do 40 songs like Leany Jane. I mean, you know, she's not on the bill I got today.
Obviously not, no. Obviously I'm going to be biased. It's my mum, but...
All very confusing. The Royce family busily tweeting in the background. That Ed's there. We seem to have lost Lou Bevan. Have you seen where he's actually gone?
I think he disappeared to network somewhere. Either that or get some lunch. I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure he'll be back in due course.
I remind you, you're listening to Siren FM and Southside Broadcasting on location at the 133rd Lincolnshire show, where finally, after, what is it, how long have we been here, Ben? About 4 hours?
Ooh, yes, approaching 4 hours now, yes.
But finally, the team is pretty much together with the arrival of the Snart, so we can breathe easy. It's always a delight to actually connect with the royalty when it comes to the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. As Jane Southall rightly said, we're delighted now to be able to speak to you.
I'm delighted to be here to talk to you. Thank you very much.
The wonderful Mr. Robin Battle. Robin, would you like to just share with us your thoughts on this, the 133rd Lincolnshire show?
Well, you can see all around you, it's a huge success, and it's, of course, we're blessed with wonderful weather for it. For me, it's a great honour to be president of this show. I've been coming here for something like 50 years. And I now find being taken around, I'm taken to areas of the show I've never been to before, which is a great treat for me.
And in terms of specialities, what were your former sort of areas over the last few years that you've been attending?
Well, I've always been interested in conservation things. So I've done quite a lot in the, you know, the conservation area of the show. We don't actually have stock on our own farm, so that hasn't taken me really to the stock lines. I really enjoyed going around those this morning and seeing judging in progress. The judge is very enthusiastic today about the quality of the stock.
I was just going to say, the line that we've been getting is the standard is fantastic, really. So once again, Lincoln proving it's worth its weight in gold when it comes to livestock.
Well, exactly. We've got the Longhorns here this year, as you know, but everywhere I met in that area is praising the quality of the, you know, the rings and the facilities and the space that the showground has, which they don't see elsewhere.
Well, it's Ben's first show. Ben, question to yourself?
Yeah, good afternoon now, yes. Mr. Robin Battle. How are you today? Just
very
first
well, thank you very much, yes. Getting slightly warm.
Yeah, it's getting brighter now. This is my first show, yeah. My first Lincolnshire show. I've come up from Brighton because I'm at university now.
Right.
And I'm now getting deeply involved, and just want to say it was a fantastic show. What would you say, if you could recommend for anyone who's visiting, that they look at, that they get stuck into whilst they're visiting the show?
Well, I think they must get away from just the sort of the food stands and so on and just try and see a bit of real farming. I think we've had a survey recently, something like 65% of the people that come to agricultural shows have nothing to do with the industry at all. So for them, it's an opportunity to see what happens on farms. So go to the stock lines and see some of the big machinery and see the, you know, see other parts of the showground. There's plenty of areas to get food and drink as you go around. But it's a great day for the family, I must say.
We also have Tessa Snart here, a Level 2 journalist from the University of Lincoln. Tessa, you've come up from Glinton, just outside Peterborough today. It's your second Lincolnshire show.
It is, and yes, very, yeah, it was very busy getting up here, lots of traffic.
It was a bit of a hold-up for some people, but you were all right, were you?
I was. There was a blocked road, but yes. We got new directions and we were fine, so smooth drive here, really.
Good.
How would you compare the show to last year's?
Well, I think the weather, we know this year, is going to be reliable. And it helps enormously if there's a good weather forecast beforehand, because people make their plans. If the weather forecast is a bit dodgy, then they might not come, even if it's a good day.
Although last year wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't too bad in the end. But yes. I think it was the forecast wasn't quite as good as this time. But
mind you, we did have Brexit on the Thursday as well last year.
A lot's happened in a year.
Exactly.
Well, it's very, very busy already here. I think it's just turned the afternoon, isn't it? So
yes.
Hopefully even more people will turn up. And obviously there's tomorrow. So far, it looks like a brilliant show.
Robin, great. It's been a delight as ever. Do we refer to you as President Robin Battle? I mean, in terms of the whole sequence, the official pro forma?
Yes. I am the president of the Agricultural Society. But do you just call me Robin Battle?
And something I've always been meaning to ask with respect to presidents of the Agricultural Society, do you, rather like the American presidency, when you actually sort of hand on the office, still become former president of the Lincoln Agricultural Society?
That's one of the few connections with the American presidency, I think.
Yes, yes. Well,
no, I think you're a past president, and they entertain you, as it were, for some years after you've been president. and remember you for what
of course.
Done. But, I mean, the whole thing being president for me is being, I suppose, thanked for, you know, taking part in the show for many years beforehand.
A genuine delight, Robin. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to have you here.
Okay, Annie, we've done the president. I say done the president, obviously. We have interviewed the president, and Tessa's...
he's still alive and kicking.
Exactly, that's what we expected.
We haven't really now, done him.
Exactly. Lou, we're going to head off to, I believe, the cattle and the livestock, or as you like to say, the beasts area now, because you're quite keen on the beasts,
very
I believe.
Very much so, very much so. As a child, my parents always took us to the East of England show, and we lived further down south at that point. It seemed like a forever journey to get there. But we always headed for the bulls and the sheep and the sheep shearing and all that sort of thing. So been a very big part of my growing up. And so first place I like to head to.
Ready for this, Lou?
We'll head.
So okay, as we head to the Lincoln Red Cattle, Tessa, here we are. All set and ready to go?
We are, yes. We've just kind of had a brief sort of talk about the Lincoln Red cows, which we are outside of their barn now. So...
exactly, as opposed to Lincolnshire Red Cheese, yes, which is something completely different. Lou?
That later on, in the food court.
So let's make our way here. And Annie, ready for this? I noticed you've already said the smell is already positive.
I love that country smell. I just, it means country to me.
Correct.
And you can smell all the hay and obviously fluids, if I can say that.
You won't smell that in Greater London, that smell. That's
no,
it. That's
no.
One treat that they do not have.
Okay, well, let's move on from that arguable scenario as we continue our little audio promenade here. And perhaps we can actually start off as we're in this particular zone. Tessa, quick question for your good self. Do you know why these are primarily beef cattle as opposed to dairy cattle?
I actually do not, so I think we need to find that one out.
Annie?
I have no idea.
Difference between beef and dairy cattle?
Oh, the milk, surely.
Well,
milk.
Yes. But I mean, these,
expand.
Yeah.
So I guess that they're for the meat, and then the dairy cows produce the milk.
Is it the females that produce the milk, obviously, and then the bulls are obviously
yes,
for the meat?
Obviously, yeah. If you look at these animals, how I like to explain to people, if you look at the body shape, it's rectangular.
Yeah, you can see that, actually, pointing that out.
Whereas when we go on a little bit later to see the dairy cattle, I will ask you, I won't tell you yet, but I will ask you to describe the body shape. So these animals are primarily meat animals. They give milk, but not in the same quantities that the animals which we'll see later on. They've been purely bred. It's a bit like Usain Bolt is a sprinter.
Yeah.
Mo Farah is a distance runner. Look at the built completely.
The physique is different.
So, as with animals, it is just as chalk and cheese as it is the difference between a 100 metre sprinter and a marathon runner. Each one is created, and you can look at it and almost say, yeah, that one will do the job because of the shape.
We have arrived at the dairy areas, and Louis, you said even Annie Snart can see the difference.
Well, you can. Right, girls? What can you see?
I don't think I've seen a bottom like that ever before, if I may say. I've never looked...
Not even with Celine Dion's concert.
Oh, well, hers is perfect, but...
Yeah, these are very different to the Lincoln Red cows we have just seen. Rather large. Yeah, rather large backsides.
Well, I've brought you now to the absolute Premier League of meat producing bovines, the bovine being the cattle family. These are the Belgian Blue, created in Belgium. And what you will notice, can you see the lines that you can see? Because they've got two muscles where the Lincoln has only got the one. These are known in the trade as double muscled. They've got two muscles where every other breed has only got one. Only one slight drawback.
What would that be?
Every calf is delivered by cesarean section.
Really? Oh my goodness.
They actually look like they've just been in the gym for a whole year working out. That they're very muscly. Very.
Yeah, these are the ultimate in muscle development.
So are they not capable of giving birth through the natural process?
The hand of man. The hand of man has interfered. We've bred the biggest bull to the biggest cow. They've done it in Belgium for 100 years.
So it's not even possible for these to give birth?
When I was working in the veterinary business, we had a farmer call me, Lou, send Helen over quick, I need a cesarean. And Mr. Seals, who you met at the shows, William Michael Seals. And then 10 minutes later, the phone rang. He said, Lou, cancel that call out. The bloody thing's carved on her own.
Oh,
It'll be no good. It's only as big as a cat, she said. She slipped the carp on her own and it was fine. But it was a tiny, tiny little carp where he was expecting... I mean, they're almost muscle like that when they're born.
I mean, they almost look like they're on steroids.
The word is grotesque. And you can say it to the breeders and they just go, that's the way it is, mate.
Are they sort of... They're not in any pain or anything. They're fine.
They're just Schwarzenegger.
So somebody purposely mixed these together to produce this...
Yeah, probably about 150 years ago. We're not talking about something that's recent. It's something which has evolved in Belgium, where all the cattle look like this. And we're lucky to have all the different ones.
So it's an incredibly busy time when they're calving, then? Because you've got to have all hands on deck, haven't you? Right.
And the one problem, not only all hands on deck, as we used to say with Mr. Seals, all his cows were made pregnant from a petri dish, ET, embryo transplants.
Artificial insemination?
Go further. You draw the eggs from the female, flush her ovaries into a petri dish.
All done into the dish.
Yeah.
Okay.
20 eggs. Semen from the famous bull, prize bull. These are cows, these are females, so look at the muscle on that way, you can see the bulls. Put the semen on, fertilise it in the petri dish, let the embryos grow for 48 hours. Implant them back into a recipient mother. She can be anything. She can be an old brown cow like that. But once you put the pure embryo back into her, she has no influence. All she does is grow it. She's got no genetic influence whatsoever. The calf is created. But when Mr. Seal says, right, I need a cesarean, if one cow is ready to calf, and he's got 30 that were all done on the same day, guess what? 30 cesareans on the same day.
Yeah. So the farmer... all of a sudden, has got to have a crash course in delivering.
He needs a team of vets.
Yes, absolutely.
A team.
Busy day then, on that day.
We once went to do one with Helen, and when we get there, Mr. Seals and his brother were meticulous. They had her tied up. She was halter trained anyway. They had her all shaved. You can see the scar where that's had a cesarean.
Yeah.
They were shaved, and Helen went, just a minute, Willie. This was the last one. She got 9 cesarean scars.
Oh,
and it meant you can't go in where you've already been in because you've got granular tissue that's built up. You have to move an inch south.
Yeah.
And we were so far south, there was a danger that all the hooks would fall out.
Oh, bless her.
Anyway, we did the cesarean and got a wonderful calf, but
that was it.
Graphically illustrated as ever, though, I have to say, as the last sort of 4 or 5 minutes. Interesting times. Oh, we're continuing our little promenade around the cattle rings now, where judging is still continuing to take place, Lou. And where are you taking us now?
I want to go and have a look at... we'll have a little peek in here. These are the Charolais, because this particular breed, whereas we've always bred in England cattle as food animals, in other parts of Europe, mainly France, their need 200 years ago was for oxen, big pulling carts and things like that.
Oh yes,
working cattle. So we'll just step for 30 seconds inside to show you the Charolais, because you can see how these were originated to be the load pullers.
Right.
So what are your thoughts, Annie, as we sort of move through this tremendous
the variety of beast that's here today, you're getting a good variety. I can't even remember this as a young child seeing.
You've blotted it out of your memory. Maybe it was the trauma was too much.
Probably.
After the 9th cesarean, where can you go?
This is it. Yeah, that's the sad side. But obviously, we have to produce meat. We have to keep feeding the nation. So it's a fact of life. As a child, you're not shown that, but you have to man up as you get older and understand that people need feeding.
Although having supported hashtag Meat Free Monday with the great-great-grandson of Charles Darwin recently, maybe there is an alternative way, Lou.
Well, yeah, if you work out the figures, I was looking at some figures the other day, to produce a pound of coffee requires something like 2,000 litres of water. This planet, water, is a commodity that maybe we should be changing from coffee drinking if it requires just that much of it to create a 1 pound pot of coffee. It's frightening. If you look at everything, you'd soon not eat anything because the pros and cons would
become a breatharian.
No. Some people are that dumb, they need to be told to breathe out.
Fair point. Any points here, Lou, you'd like to raise about the woodline Charolais?
Okay, the Charolais from France, along with its cousin, the Limousin, from the Limoges area of France. These were built, originally, these were beasts of burden. They were a working animal, the oxen that would work out in the fields. Because you've probably heard of the great wagon trains in America, where the pioneers went out to California on the West Coast. Contrary to the John Wayne films, all the wagons were pulled with oxen. They were not pulled with horses.
Okay. And looking at the shape of the head, did they originally have horns, or do they have horns and they take them off?
No. Yes. Originally, all cattle had horns. Just outside in a minute, we'll show you the longhorns, the traditional big cowboy cattle. But then we found some native breeds, the Aberdeen Angus in particular, a little beef breed from Scotland. It's what we call a polled, naturally polled. It doesn't have horns. So, genetically, cross it in and cross it out, and you don't lose too much of the attributes of the main animal, but you create it having no horns. You can see the hump in the middle of the head, which it would normally have had a horn coming out of each side. So the hump is still there, but there's no horns.
So obviously we know that with most animals it's a defence mechanism.
Correct.
But was the horns used for anything else as regard to farming? Like were they used to, I don't know, wrap rope round or to steer the animal?
They used to put a wooden block over the neck, a bit like the old milkmaid's carrying thing that she used to carry the two buckets with. Mm-hmm. That's what they had. But it was mainly a safety issue that they decided that they would be better to have no horns on. As we'll see when we pop outside with the longhorns, when they housed them in the winter, they used to poke each other's eyes out.
Oh.
Actually, movement now.
But that was another reason for dehorning. Mm-hmm. Better for the cattle, for themselves, and also for the people handling them.
Absolutely.
They weren't getting horn where they didn't want it.
Well, that's it, I can imagine. Goodness me.
So what exactly makes these particular cows good for pulling the wagons, or did back in the day?
Well, they just had such massive body weight, such gorgeous temperaments, and to be honest, you've heard of the saying, oh, you're being led by the nose. You can lead a beast by its nose. Some of the young bulls, you see the fellow in the corner, these have got permanent rings in their noses, but you'll notice when they go in the ring, even the females appear to have rings. They're not. It's a clip known as a bulldog, which just clips in the nose. It's a bit like, remember the school teacher when she grabbed hold of you by the hair there and said...
Oh, yes, yeah.
You went
it's illegal now, of course, Lou. Just want to point that out. You can, as a witness there, actually sue Annie if you wish to.
You went exactly where it's equivalent to what we call a twitch in a horse, when we put a twitch in. It's the same with being led by the nose.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly, at what age is the ring put in their nose?
A young bull, we would probably ring him at about 8 months old, with a size one ring, which is what you're looking at there. As he gets bigger, we'll change it for a bigger ring. We don't put the huge ring in to start with because it almost goes under his chin.
Yeah. And is it painful to the animal to have that put in?
Have you got your ears pierced?
Yes.
Did it hurt?
I didn't know much about it. I was very young, so probably if it's the same sort of...
Same thing.
...sensation to it.
Same thing. And your nasal tissue, surprisingly enough, if I was to squeeze your nose, you wouldn't try to knock me off.
No.
It, pheromone job, it freezes you.
And when you're leading an animal by this, is it painful, or they don't realise?
No, they just come with you because you've got hold of the business end.
Yes,
you're leading them by the nose.
Okay.
It's a whole new theme for Sound and Country Vision, I feel, but anyway,
definitely.
Let's motor on. We just had the announcements that we're heading towards the dairy, also known as the Greyhounds, as Annie dexterously actually skips through the cow pats here with true success, really. They look very calm, Lou.
Yeah, serene calm. These are the Porsches of the dairy game. These are the jerseys, which, if you remember, do you remember when you used to talk about gold top milk?
Yes.
Channel Islands milk. These are the breed from the islands of Jersey that give the meat milk, which is incredibly high in butterfat, which we're told is not good for us, but believe you me, it's lovely on your cornflakes. Really rich. This is the milk that makes the Jersey ice cream, the clotted creams and all this kind of thing. But when it comes to, there are bag of bones that hold up a milk bag, that thing underneath, the udder, that gives the milk, and all the farmer wants is four legs to keep that udder out of the mud. Doesn't matter that they look like greyhounds.
So they do, don't they? They look as though they need a good meal.
Yeah, they're completely different to the cows we have just seen. You actually think that they need to be fed a lot more, but I'm guessing their body type is that way so that they can produce the milk.
Been created, that all they're doing is living every day to give X number of litres of milk and no more than that.
So, coming to a conclusion of the bovine area, Lou, that question that we actually teased both Annie and Tessa with right at the start, between what's the difference between a beef cow and a dairy cow in terms of shape of their rear end? Do you think they were ready for...
What have we? Well, obviously, the meat beast, if I can use that term, is rectangle in shape. It's a completely different, it's very stocky, very thick, very muscly, and then obviously the dairy cow is very skinny because it doesn't require to have all that meat around it. We're not going to eat it for meat, we're only going to have it for the milk.
And also, if you look, and that beast is not a bad example, they're almost triangular.
Yes.
The bottom line seems to be going up to meet the top line.
Definitely.
Whereas the beef animal, it was all things level.
Definitely.
Rectangular.
Yes.
I call these triangular. You see
so
it in the body shape.
Which gives us the bit that we need.
No muscle.
No muscle at all. Definitely not, no.
It's worth a trip alone for that, wasn't it, Tessa?
Definitely. I've learnt, and all our listeners will have learnt, the difference between all our different breeds of cows. I think it's important as well, because it's not spoken about enough, like you say, as a child, you just know
it's
a cow, don't you?
Yeah.
But it's important to know sort of what produces what. So, thank you.
It's the sort of thing we'd actually like to have as a country song, I feel. It's the edition of Sound and Country Vision.
Education. We're about education.
It
that's what we're about.
Definitely.
But we make it fun, or we try to make it fun. Mm-hmm. And ask me a daft question, and I'll try and give you a really daft answer that answers you. No, that makes it fun.
And
you remember better.
It's a necessity. We have to be fed.
Of course.
So, of course, yes, if you teach children young enough, maybe they won't be so opposed to, obviously, the industry.
Yeah.
Shall we check out the pigs then?
If you wish.
Well, Annie has clearly started pig petting now, so the heat is clearly getting to your mum.
We've lost her now. I think it will just be a trio from now on. She'll stay here at the pig pen. She's found two, they're females, aren't they? Two females laying next to each other, and that's it. We've lost her.
Is that a natural reaction, Lou, that we're seeing here?
It's just a bit of bonding going off, you know. It's all right. Doesn't mean she's a bad person.
Has that made you a better all-round human being, Annie?
I'm taking them home, I think, yes. So we're going to have to arrange a truck. I'll be taking these home with me.
Can I just say, you colour coordinate beautifully with the pigs today as well. Your dress is a pale pink, like the pigs here.
Outfit.
I've just done a bit of counting there, right? I've just been counting. Do you know why I've been counting?
The teats.
Yes.
Is that because that's probably the amount of piglets that... they will bear.
Yeah, if you got a gilt that only had, say, six teats on each side, you wouldn't breed from her.
So they don't always have.
You're looking always for the maximum.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
That's part of the genetic makeup.
Oh, my goodness me. So she's got seven.
So she can rear 14 babies. Do the maths.
Possibly I let sleeping pigs lie, but never mind.
Yeah, we've kind of interrupted them, so we best let them lay and rest.
Chilling out, exactly.
Chilling out in the heat.
Yes, I think we've actually got the next Dawson Rains track here. I'm dub beating that Sound and Country Vision put large there from our wonderful line here. Lou, is this a saddleback, or is that?
Yes, a saddleback, yes. Technically, a Wessex or an Essex, depending on whether it has white back feet or not. I'm not sure which it is. But, yeah, as a nickname, we refer to them as a generic, as a saddleback, because it has the white line over its back where the horse would have a saddle.
OK, so these are quite lively pigs. I don't know whether they're just lively in themselves, but compared
to... already tried to mate with my leg, but that's OK.
Yes, compared to the last pigs we've just seen, who were just not bothered, they're laying down. What are the difference between them? What's a saddleback? What makes it a saddleback?
I think what makes these... It's where it genetically started from.
Right.
A bit like the Gloucester Old Spot gives you a good clue that they originate in Gloucestershire. These originate, as I say, in Essex or Wessex. It's probably 300 years ago when a farmer said, "Hey, I like that boar that you've got. Could you mate it to my sow?" So we get a litter of pigs. and it was a crossbred that bred the original one with a line around its back. And one farmer said, "Hey, bargum, I do like that. Sell me a youngster off it," and hence the breed was formed. As simple as that.
Obviously, if any farmers are listening, and they don't actually say "e by gum" as a standard sort of stereotypical routine, we'd just like to point that out, as indeed my friend, the sailor back here, has obviously sort of mentioned as well. Very keen to obviously get himself on air.
Another reason why these are active also, the sides of the tent are down, getting fresh air. Those pigs up there, it was red hot.
Yes,
all they
absolutely
wanted to do was lay down and sleep.
Yeah, so these are lively because...
Air conditioning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
these are the lucky pigs.
Yeah. And I've just learned that actually these pigs here, although their breed is bred for certain different types of meat, the did you call this the Borak?
Jurok.
Borak.
Halfway
there. Jurok. For bacon only, and this one for this one here, the saddleback, different types of meat.
Anything within the bracket pork.
Absolutely, but these ones here are actually from people that have them for a hobby.
Mainly
so that they're not going to the abattoir, and they're here for show purpose.
Correct.
Reasons, which is lovely. It's nice to know that.
Well, it gives the Joe public a chance to look at the breeds and where they came from, and ask the breeders various things. I know from us interviewing them here before, most of them are just hobby farmers.